lowly Omega. Even I can see that. Scarlet hissed. She could see the fury building inside Ran, feel the anger rolling off him. Grand-mère! Then it became obvious what her grandmother was trying to do.
No, she doesn't mean it,
she despised herself for pleading, but couldn't care.
She's old, she's delirious, just leave her!
Fuming into the cell, Ran snatched Scarlet up by her hair and pried her away from her grandmother. She shrieked, clawing at his forearm, but he tossed her back into the corner.
No!
Her grandma screamed in pain as Ran lifted her by the throat. In a blink, she was pinned against the wall, too weak to flail, to fight, to put up any resistance.
Leave her alone!
Scarlet scrambled up and jumped onto Ran's back, locking her elbows around his neck, squeezing with all her might. When Ran didn't even flinch, she clawed at him, aiming for his eye sockets. Ran howled and dropped her grandmother into a heap, then flung Scarlet off his back. She collapsed against the wall, but she barely felt the impact, her attention falling on her grandmother's limp, bandaged form.
Grandmère!
Their gazes met, and she could see, in an instant, that her grandmother would not be moving again. Her dry lips managed to stammer. But nothing followed. Her eyes lingered open, eerily empty. Scarlet shoved herself off the wall, but Ran was there first, his massive form crouching over her grandmother's body, scooping one hand beneath her back so that her head fell heavily onto the hard floor. Like a starved animal having brought down his first kill, Ran leaned over and clamped his jaws over Michelle's neck. Scarlet screamed and fell backward. The world spun with the sight of blood, and Ran crouched on all fours. Her grandmother's accusation echoed back to her. They've turned you all into monsters. Still in shock, she forced her face away and rolled onto her side. Her stomach heaved, but there was nothing inside her but bile and saliva. She tasted iron and acid and blood and realized she'd bitten her tongue when Ran had thrown her at the wall. But there was no pain, only hollowness and horror and a dark cloud creeping over her. She was not here. This was not happening. Stomach burning from trying to push up food that wasn't there, she crawled toward the far wall, putting as much distance between her and Ran as she could. Ran and her grandmother. Her hand fell into the streak of light from the hallway. Her skin was sickly pale. She was trembling.
Run!
Lifting her head, she could see the start of a stairwell at the end of the hallway. Beside it, a painted sign long since faded. To stage.
Run!
Her brain struggled to find the meaning of the words. To stage. 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 Her grandmother's last words.
Run!
Reaching forward, she wrapped her fingers around the bars of the cell and used them as leverage, straining to pull herself up, to stand, to push forward, into the hallway, into the light. Her legs felt non-existent at first, as she hobbled to the bottom of the stairs, but as she climbed, she found strength in them. She pushed forward. She ran. A closed door loomed at the top of the stairs, an old wooden door, not even equipped with an ID scanner. It creaked when she shoved it open. Then, footsteps below, coming for her. Scarlet emerged backstage. Old pillars stood clustered together to her right, and a maze of fake stone walls and painted trees filled the shadows to her left. The door slammed behind her as she ran into the wooden forest, grabbing a wrought iron candelabra. She lifted it in both hands and waited, feet braced. Ran burst through the door, chin covered in blood. Scarlet swung as hard as she could. A roar was wrenched out of her as the iron bar collided with Ran's skull. He cried out and stumbled back into the curtain. He tripped on the fabric and fell backward. Scarlet thrust the candelabra at him, not sure she had the strength to heft it again. She heard fabric ripping, but she was already gone, dodging between the set pieces, scanning the creaking wooden floorboards as she lunged over coiled, dusty power cords and toppled spotlights. She stumbled onto the stage, the empty expanse of wooden floorboards and trap doors, and half jumped, half fell into the phantom orchestra. Ignoring a jolt of pain that burned across her knee, she shoved the music stands aside and bolted into the auditorium. Footsteps thumped across the stage behind her, inhumanly fast. The rows of empty chairs flashed by, and all she could see was the door looming ahead. He grabbed her hood. She let him pull her back, used the momentum to swing around and aim her knee for his groin. He let out a cry of pain and staggered. Scarlet darted through the crumbling marble arches, past the cherubs with their broken arms, past the shattered chandeliers and broken tile floors. She flew down the marble stairs, focusing on the huge doors that would lead to the street. If only she could get out of there, into public, into the real world. As she hit the lobby floor, the silhouette of another man moved across the exit. Her feet skidded to a stop, landing her in the square of pale sunlight from the hole in the ceiling. Pivoting, she ran for the other staircase, the stairs that went back down to the depths of the opera house. Above, a door slammed shut, and there were footsteps pounding, and she couldn't tell if it was one set of footsteps or two. Sweat coated the back of her shirt. Her legs ached, her burst of adrenaline fading. She rounded a corner and barreled into darkness. The main room had once been used for important guests of the opera house, and a series of doors and hallways led to every corner of the sublevel. Scarlet knew the halls to the right would take her back to the prison cells, so she veered left. A drained fountain basin filled the space between the two stairways that led to the upper level. The bronze statue of a half-dressed maiden lingered in an alcove atop a pedestal, one of the few statues that seemed to have survived so many years of neglect. Scarlet ran for the opposite staircase, wondering if going back up to the lobby would be suicide, and yet knowing that to be trapped down here was no alternative. She reached the bottom of the stairs, and her foot hit the low ledge of the fountain. She stumbled, crying out. Ran was on her before she hit the ground. Fingernails dug into her shoulder, flipping her onto her back amid the tiny broken tiles of the dry basin. She peered up into his glowing eyes, the eyes of a madman, of a murderer, and she remembered Wolf on stage at the street fight. Fear clamped her throat shut, strangling a scream. He gripped her shirt and lifted her from the ground. She grabbed his wrists, but was too petrified to fight as he brought her face toward his. Scarlet nearly gagged on the stench of his breath, like rotten meat and blood. So much blood. Her grandmother. "If it wasn't such a repulsive thought, I might take advantage of you here, now that we're all alone," he said, and Scarlet shuddered. "Just to see the look on my brother's face when I told him about it." With a roar, he threw her at the statue. Her back collided with the bronze pedestal, and pain exploded through her head, knocking the wind from her. She collapsed to the ground, grasping her chest, trying to draw air back into her lungs. Ran crouched before her, ready to spring, his tongue swiped out over his canines, coating them with strings of saliva. Her stomach lurched. She kicked at the ground in an attempt to put herself into the small space between the statue and the wall, to disappear, to hide. He sprang. She cowered against the wall, but the impact didn't come. Scarlet heard a battle cry, followed by a heavy thud. Snarling, she lowered her trembling arms. In the center of the cavern, two forms tangled with each other, jaws snapping, blood dripping over taut muscles. Eyesight blurring, she managed to ease in a breath, glad to feel her chest expand. Reaching overhead, she gripped the statue and tried to pull herself up, but the muscles in her back screamed at her. Clenching her jaw, she worked on tucking her legs under her and battled against the pain until she could stand, panting and sweating against the bronze goddess. If she could just get away before the brawl was over. Ran pulled the other man into a headlock. The opponent's glowing emerald eyes pierced Scarlet for one heart-stopping moment before he flipped Ran over his head. The ground vibrated from the impact, but Scarlet barely felt it. Wolf. It was Wolf. Chapter 40. Ran rebounded onto his feet, and he and Wolf sprang apart, each straining against unburned energy. Scarlet could almost see it, simmering and seething beneath their skin. Wolf was covered in gashes and blood, but he didn't seem to notice as he stood slightly hunched, hands flexing. Ran bared his fangs.
"Return to your post, Ran," Wolf said with a snarl. "This one is mine."
Ran snorted in disgust.
"And let you embarrass me, embarrass our family with all your newfound sympathy? You're a disgrace."
He spat a glob of blood onto the broken concrete.
"Our mission is to kill. Now stand aside so I might kill her, if you're not willing to do it yourself."
Scarlet glanced behind her. The staircase was low enough that she could climb over the railing, but her body ached just thinking of it. Trying to shake off the helplessness, she struggled to crawl to the edge of the fountain.
"She is mine,"
Wolf repeated, his voice tinted with a low growl.
"I do not want to fight you over a human, brother," Ran said, though the loathing etched into his face made the endearment sound like a joke. "Then you will leave her. She was left under my jurisdiction. You should not have abandoned your own post to come for her." "She is mine!"
Wolf's temper flared, and he swiped at the nearest candelabra, tearing the bronze arm from the wall. Scarlet ducked as it crashed to the floor, sending wax candlesticks hurtling into the fountain's basin. They both remained in their hunched stances, panting, glaring. Finally, Ran snarled.
"Then you've made your choice."
He pounced. Wolf batted him from the air with an open palm, swiping him down onto the fountain wall. Ran landed with a yelp, but quickly rolled back onto his feet. Wolf lunged, digging his teeth into Ran's forearm. With a cry of pain, Ran swiped his sharp nails down Wolf's chest, leaving crimson gouges. Unlocking his jaw, Wolf backhanded Ran across the face, sending him reeling into the fountain's statue. Scarlet screamed and stumbled back against a column at the base of the stairs. Ran attacked again, and Wolf, expectant, grabbed him by the neck and used the momentum to throw him overhead. Ran rolled gracefully onto his feet. They were both panting, blood soaking through their shredded clothes. They paced, waiting, hunting for weaknesses. Again, Ran made the first move. He threw his whole weight at Wolf, tackling him to the ground. His jaws went for the neck, snapping, but Wolf held him off, hands wrapped around his throat. He grunted beneath Ran's weight, struggling to avoid the dripping fangs, when Ran dug his fist into Wolf's shoulder, the bullet wound from Scarlet's gun. Howling, Wolf curled his legs to gain purchase and shoved Ran off him with a kick to the stomach. Ran rolled away, and they both staggered to their feet again. Scarlet could see their energy dissolving as they stood, wobbling, gazes flashing murder. Neither moved to cover their wounds. Ran swiped a bare arm across his mouth, streaking his chin with blood. Wolf crouched and sprang, shoving Ran onto his back and landing on top of him. A fist clawed for him. Wolf ducked, catching the brunt of the damage on his ear. Pushing his opponent into the marble, Wolf raised his face to the ceiling and howled. Scarlet forced her back into the column, petrified. The howl resounded off the walls and through her skull and joints, filling every empty space in her body. When he stopped howling, Wolf dropped down and snapped his jaw around Ran's throat. Scarlet hid behind her arms, but couldn't bring herself to look away. Blood gurgled up, coating Wolf's chin and neck, dribbling down onto the mosaic floor. Ran shook and jerked, but the struggle was quick to drain out of him. A moment later,
Wolf released him, letting the dead body slump onto the ground. Reaching around the column, Scarlet grasped the stair railing and hauled herself up the flight, running, half-limping up the steps. The lobby was still deserted. Her feet splashed through the puddle in the center of the room as she ran for the doors, doors that would lead to the street, to freedom. Then she heard Wolf chasing her. She shoved through the exit. The cool evening air engulfed her as she pounded down the stairs to the empty street, already scanning the open square for help. She saw no one. No one. The door slammed open behind her before it had time to close, and she stumbled blindly across the street. In the distance, she saw a woman running into a nearby alley. Hope flashed, and Scarlet urged her feet to move faster, to fly. She suddenly felt like she could take off and soar over the concrete if she could just reach the woman, just use her port to call for help. And then another figure appeared, another man. His gait abnormally fast. He sped into the alley, and a moment later, the woman's terrified scream screeched across the square and was cut short. A howl erupted from the same dark alley. In the distance, another howl rose up to greet it, and another, filling the twilight with bloodthirsty cries. Terror and hopelessness choked Scarlet all at once, and she fell, silt and concrete digging into her palms. Gasping, drenched with sweat, she rolled onto her back. Wolf had stopped running, but he still came for her, prowling toward her with measured, patient steps. He was panting almost as hard as she was. Somewhere off in the city, another chorus of howling started. Wolf did not join them. His attention was all for Scarlet, cold and sharp and hungry. The pain was clear. The fury was clearer. She scrambled away on her burning palms. Wolf paused as he reached the center of the intersection. He was silhouetted by the moonlight, eyes gold and green and black and seething. She saw him drag his tongue across his fangs, watched as he curled and uncurled his fingers. His jaw worked as if to take in a bigger gulp of air. She could see his fight, his struggle, as clearly as she could see the animal, the wolf, in him, as clearly as she could still see the man. Wolf. Her tongue was parched. She tried to wet her dry lips and tasted blood. What have they done to you?
You.
The word was spat out at her, full of hatred.
What have you done to me?
He took another stumbling step toward her, and she scooted away, pushing at the ground with the heels of her shoes, but it was useless. In the blink of an eye, he had crouched down over her, knocking her onto her elbows without even having to touch her. His hands hit the ground on either side of her head. Scarlet gaped up at eyes that now seemed to glow in the dark. His mouth was ruby red, the front of his shirt black from the gore. She could smell blood on him, on his clothes, his hair, his skin. If it was this pungent to her, she couldn't imagine how it must overwhelm him. He growled and lowered his nose to her neck, sniffing. I know you don't want to hurt me, Wolf. His nose bumped against her jaw. His breath caressed her collarbone. You helped me. You rescued me. A steaming tear escaped down her cheek. The tips of his hair, wild and messy again, brushed against her lips.
Things have changed.
Her heart fluttered like a firefly with a missing wing. Her pulse pounded through her veins, expecting the clamp of jaws on her throat at any moment. But something was holding him back. He could have killed her already, but he hadn't. She gulped.
You protected me from Ran. It wasn't so you could kill me now.
You don't know the thoughts going through my head.
I know you're different from them.
She attached her gaze to the enormous moon over the skyline, reminded herself that this was not a monster. This was Wolf, the man who had held her so tenderly on the train, the man who had given her the ID chip to help her escape.
You said you never wanted to scare me. Well, you're scaring me.
A growl vibrated against her. Scarlet shivered, but forced her body not to shrink away. Instead, she gulped and brought her hands up to his face. Stroking her thumbs over his cheeks, she placed a kiss against Wolf's temple. His body tensed, and she was able to angle his head back just far enough so that she could see his eyes. His lips curled into a snarl, but she held his gaze.
"Stop this, Wolf! You're not one of them anymore!"
His brow twitched, but his resentment seemed to fade. His expression held pain and desperation and mute anger, but not for her.
"He's in my head,"
he said, his voice a rumbling growl.
"Scarlet, I can't."
He looked away, face scrunching. Scarlet traced her fingers along his face, the same jaw, the same cheekbones, the same scars all splattered with blood. She brushed her fingers through his wild hair.
"Just stay with me. Protect me like you said you would."
Something whooshed by her ear and thudded into Wolf's neck. Wolf went rigid. He looked up, eyes wide and already brightened with bloodlust, but then they grew bleary. With a strangled gurgle in his throat, the strength left him, and he collapsed on top of her. Chapter 41.
"Wolf! Wolf!"
Craning her neck, Scarlet saw a man and a woman sprinting toward her, the moonlight glinting off the woman's gun. Scarlet's terror was short-lived. They weren't crazed Lunars. She returned her attention to Wolf, searching out the dart embedded in his neck.
"Wolf!"
she yelled again, prying the dart out of his flesh and dropping it to the ground.
"Are you all right?"
the woman yelled as she got closer. Scarlet ignored her until her own name cut through her panic.
"Scarlet? Scarlet Benoit?"
She glanced up again as the woman slowed. But no, not a woman. A girl with messy hair and fine, vaguely familiar features. Scarlet frowned, sure she'd seen the girl before. The man caught up, gasping for air.
"Who are you?"
she asked, locking her arms around Wolf as the two stooped to pull him away from her.
"What did you do to him?"
"Come on," said the man, grabbing Wolf. He tried to pry Wolf away, but she held tight. "We have to get out of here."
"Stop it! Don't touch him! Wolf!"
She gripped the sides of Wolf's face and tilted him back. If it hadn't been for his fangs and the blood on his jaw, he would have looked peaceful.
"What did you do to him?"
"Scarlet, where is your grandmother? Is she with you?" said the girl. This brought Scarlet's scattered attention back to her.
"My grandmother?"
The girl knelt beside her.
"Michelle Benoit, do you know where she is?"
The girl's words tripped over themselves in her rush to speak. Scarlet blinked. Her memory shifted. She did know this girl. Light bounced off the girl's fingers, and Scarlet realized what she had seen before wasn't a gun. It was her hand.
"Lynn Cinder,"
she whispered. "Don't worry," said the man. "We're the good guys."
"Scarlet,"
said Cinder, grasping Wolf by the shoulders to leverage some of the weight away from her. "I know how it looked on the net screens, but I swear we're not here to hurt you. I just need to know where your grandmother is. Is she in danger?"
Scarlet gulped.
This was Princess Celine. This was the girl they'd been searching for, the girl her grandmother had been questioned over, the girl her grandmother had given everything to protect. Together, she and the man heaved Wolf away, dropping him onto the concrete.
"Please," said Cinder. "Your grandmother?"
"She's in the opera house," Scarlet said. "She's dead."
The girl gaped at her, with pity or disappointment. Scarlet couldn't tell which. Sitting up, she flattened her palm against Wolf's chest, relieved to feel it rise beneath her touch.
"They were looking for you."
Surprise quickly stole away the girl's sympathy.
"Come on," said the man from behind her, stooping and hooking his elbow beneath Scarlet's armpit. "Time to go."
No, I'm not leaving him! She scrambled out of his hold and crawled toward Wolf's unconscious body, tying her arms around his head. The strangers gawked at her like she was mad.
He's not like the rest!
He's exactly like the rest, said the man. He was trying to eat you!
He saved my life!
The strangers exchanged disbelieving glances, and the girl gave a baffled shrug.
Fine, the man said. You take the helm.
He pulled Scarlet off Wolf while the girl grabbed Wolf's wrist and hoisted him up over her shoulder, grunting with the effort. The man skirted behind and grabbed Wolf's legs.
Holy spades, he muttered, already breathless. What are these guys made of?
Cinder started moving toward the opera house at a pace only barely slower than a jaunt. Scarlet ducked in between them, supporting Wolf's abdomen as well as she could as they awkwardly stumbled across the square. Past the woman, the gleaming form of a military cargo ship poked out from the next street. A howl nearly startled Scarlet into dropping Wolf's body. She could not imagine feeling more vulnerable, her arms wrapped around Wolf's torso, leaving her stomach and chest exposed, moving at this snail's pace, sweating, exhausted, in pain, blood oozing down her side.
You'd better have those tranquilizers ready, the man said.
Can only put in one at a time,
the man cursed beneath his breath, then gasped.
Cinder! Tenna!
There was a snap, and a dart lodged itself into a man's chest on the sidewalk in front of the theater. He had crumpled to the ground before Scarlet even realized he was there.
Let's pick it up, the man behind her said.
How many more of those do you have?
Just three, the girl panted.
Gonna have to restock.
Right, I'll just head down to the convenience store and...
She didn't finish, the strain too much. Cinder tripped and they all stumbled, Wolf's body landing on the ground with a thud. Scarlet pulled out from beneath him and her heart lurched to see blood gushing out of his wounds, made worse from the trek.
Wolf!
An eerie howling rose up all around them, much closer than it had seemed before.
Open the ramp!
The girl yelled, startling the man.
We need bandages, said Scarlet.
The girl got to her feet and grasped Wolf's wrist again.
There are bandages on the ship. Come on!
The man ran ahead, screaming, Iko, open the hatch!
Scarlet heard the clicking of gears and the humming of electricity as the hatch began to open, revealing the welcoming interior of the ship. Pulling herself onto her feet, she just grabbed Wolf's ankles when she saw a man loping toward them at a sprint, his nostrils flaring, lips pulled taut against his fangs. He was one of the men who had first taken her to her cell. A ping, a thunk, as a dart buried itself into his forearm. He roared and increased his speed for two steps before his anger faded and he fell forward, face slamming onto the pavement.
Almost there, said Cinder through her teeth, picking up Wolf's dropped wrists.
More howling greeted them from the roads and alleys and shadows, great loping figures appearing out of the darkness. Scarlet's back and legs ached, and her palms were slick as she struggled to retain her grip on Wolf's ankles.
They're coming!
I noticed!
Scarlet fell, crashing onto her knees. She looked up at Wolf's unconscious face, at the panicking girl, and the frustration welled up inside her. She forced herself to stand again, though her legs were no stronger than unbaked dough. Then the man was back, shoving her toward the ship.
Go!
He yelled and grabbed Wolf's ankles.
Thorn, you're supposed to be flying the ship, you dunce!
Scarlet turned toward the ship's open hatch.
I can fly! Just get him inside!
She ran, though her mind screamed at her for leaving Wolf behind. Her muscles burned, her head pounded with the rush of blood. She could only focus on putting one foot in front of another. Ignoring the burning, ignoring the sharp, stabbing pain in her side, blinking away the sweat. One more step. Something sliced across her back. She heard the rip of fabric, a loud thump, and then something grabbed her ankle. She screamed and collapsed at the bottom of the ramp. Fingernails buried themselves into the flesh of her calf, and she cried out in pain. Whistle, thud. The hand released her. Scarlet kicked the man in the jaw before scrambling up the rest of the ramp, into the gaping hull of the ship. She flew into the cockpit and stumbled into the pilot seat. They hadn't bothered to stop the engines, and the ship rumbled and purred around her. Her motions were automatic. She could barely see for the salty sting of sweat in her eyes. Her heartbeat felt like horses' hooves trampling her chest. But her fingers knew what to do as they breezed over the panel.
Captain? Cinder?
Startled, she spun back toward the door, but there was no one there.
Who's there?
A momentary silence, then,
who are you?
Scarlet swiped the sweat from her forehead. The ship. The ship was talking to her.
I'm Scarlet. We need to get ready for takeoff. Can you? Where are Thorn and Cinder? Right behind me. Is this ship equipped with auto lift?
A series of lights lit up on the panel.
Auto lift and auto magnetic stabilizers.
Good. She reached for the thruster output control and waited to hear the sound of footsteps on the ramp. A drop of sweat slid down her temple. She gulped, harshly, failing in her attempt to wet her sandpaper throat.
What's taking them so long?
Swiveling the chair around, she threw herself toward the cockpit entrance and peered past the cargo bay. Wolf's prone body was laid out not a dozen steps from the end of the ramp, and there were Lynn Cinder and her friend standing back to back. They were surrounded by 7 lunar operatives and the Thaumaturge. Chapter 42. Cinder sensed the Thaumaturge before she saw him, like a snake slithering into her brain, urging her to stop running, to stand still, and be captured. Her right leg obeyed. Her left kept going. With a yelp, she crashed to her hands and knees. The unconscious man, Wolf, nearly crushed her before his body rolled away. Thorn cried out and tripped, barely able to catch himself before falling. Cinder jumped back to her feet and spun around. The men came out of the shadows, from the alleyways, around corners, from behind the ship, each with their glowing eyes and sharp canines bared. 7 in all. She spotted the Thaumaturge, handsome as they always were, with curly black hair and a chiseled face. He wore a red coat, a second-level Thaumaturge. Backing up, she collided with Thorn.
So, he murmured, how many more darts do you have?
The Thaumaturge's dark irises sparkled with moonlight.
1.
She doubted the Thaumaturge could have heard her, but he smiled serenely and tucked his hands into his maroon sleeves.
Right, said Thorn. In that case...
He snatched the officer's stolen gun from his belt and spun, aiming for the Thaumaturge, then froze.
Oh, no!
From the corner of her eye, Cinder saw Thorn's arm curl back, change direction, until the barrel was aimed at her temple instead.
Cinder!
His voice nearly broke from panic. The Thaumaturge's expression remained complacent. Cinder held her breath, stilling her nerves, and targeted her last tranquilizer at Thorn's leg. The thunk made her cringe, but within seconds, the gun had clattered from Thorn's fingers and his body collapsed motionless on top of Wolf's. A warm laugh spilled out of the Thaumaturge.
"Hello, Miss Lynn. How pleasant to make your acquaintance."
She swooped her gaze over the 7 men. They were all threatening, hungry, ready to pounce on her and tear her limb from limb at the slightest provocation. Somehow, she preferred that to the Thaumaturge's gleeful amusement. At least with these men, there was no misinterpreting their intentions. She'd taken 3 steps forward before she realized it. She braced herself and strained to keep her feet still, wobbling for a moment, before finding balance and standing solid on the pavement. At the same time that her bionics picked up on the intrusion, bioelectrical manipulation detected. Initializing resistance proceed. The text vanished as Cinder regained purchase of her own thoughts, her own body. Her brain was being stretched in 2 directions as the Thaumaturge failed to control her,
her own lunar gift fighting against him.
"So it's true," he said.
The pressure released, her ears popped, and she was back in her own head again. She was panting, feeling like she'd just run across the whole continent.
"You will forgive me. I did have to try." His white teeth glinted.
He didn't seem at all put off by the fact that she couldn't be controlled as easily as Thorn had been. As easily as the seven men surrounding her. Heart-skipping, she glanced at the nearest man, one with shaggy dark blonde hair and a scar that ran from temple to jaw. She forced herself to be calm, urged the desperation to subside, and reached her thoughts toward him. His mind wasn't like any of those she'd touched with her lunar gift yet. Not open and focused like Thorne's, not cold and determined like Alex, not petrified like Emily's, not anxious or proud like the military officers. This man had the mind of an animal, scattered and wild and raging with primal instinct. The desire to kill, the need to feast, the constant awareness of where he stood in the pack and how he could improve his station. Kill, eat, destroy. With a shudder, she pulled her thoughts away from him. The thaumaturge was chuckling again.
"What do you think of my pets? How easily they fit in with the humans, but how quickly they turn into beasts."
"You're controlling them," she said, finding her voice.
"You flatter me. I'm only encouraging their natural instincts."
"No, no person, not even animals, have instincts like this. To hunt or defend, maybe, but you've turned them into monsters."
"Perhaps there were some genetic modifications involved," he finished the statement with another chuckle, like she'd caught him in a guilty pleasure. "But don't worry, Miss Lynn. I won't let them hurt you. I want my queen to have that pleasure. Your friends, unfortunately."
In unison, two of the soldiers stepped forward and grasped Cinder by the elbows.
"Take her to the theater," said the thaumaturge. "I will inform Her Majesty that Michel Benoit turned out to be useful for something after all."
But Cinder's captors hadn't taken her two steps when the roar of an engine rattled the pavement. They hesitated, and Cinder glanced back as the rampian started to rise, hovering chest height above the street. The ramp was still down, and Cinder could see the metal vibrating, the storage crates rattling against one another.
"Cinder!" Iko's voice cut through her thundering pulse. "Get down!"
She sank to her knees, hanging limp between the two soldiers as the ship surged forward. The lowered platform collided with the two men. They dropped Cinder onto all fours, and she glanced up as the ramp cut through the rest of the soldiers, mowing down all but one who had the sense to dodge out of its way before the ramp smashed into the thaumaturge. He gasped, his legs dangling as he clung to the edge. Staying low as the belly of the ship hovered overhead, Cinder spun around and scrambled for Thorne's dropped pistol. She waited until she was sure she had a clear shot before firing. The bullet lodged itself in the thaumaturge's thigh, and he screamed, releasing the ramp and dropping onto the pavement. His calmness was gone, his face contorted with rage. The blonde soldier came out of nowhere, tackling Cinder to the ground, sending the gun skidding across the pavement. She struggled to push him off, but he was too heavy. Pinning her right arm to the ground, she swung a punch at him with her metal fist, heard the bones crunch on impact, but he didn't release her. He snarled and opened his jaws wide. Just as he brought his mouth toward her neck, the ship spun in the air. The landing gear took the soldier in his side, throwing him off Cinder. She rolled away, colliding with Thorne's and Wolf's prone bodies. The ship swept back around, its running lights washing over the street. The ramp scraped against the road as it settled back to the ground, not a half a dozen steps from where Cinder lay. Inside the ship, Scarlet Benoit's head appeared in the cockpit's doorway.
"Come on!"
Clambering to her feet, Cinder grabbed Thorne by the elbow and dragged him off Wolf. But she'd barely moved when a long howl ricocheted down her spine. It was quickly picked up by the rest of the soldiers, the sound deafening.
Cinder stumbled at the base of the ramp and looked back. Two of the soldiers were lying motionless, the two who had taken the brunt of the ship's impact. The rest were crouched down on all fours, their faces turned up to the sky as they howled. The thaumaturge, farther away, picked himself up from the ground with a sneer. Though it was too dark to see any blood, Cinder could tell he was favoring the leg that had been shot. Brushing the sweat from her eyes, Cinder focused on the soldier closest to her. She mentally reached out for the bioelectric waves that were rolling off him, frenzied and hungry, and clamped her thoughts around them. One howl was cut off sharply from the rest. A headache was already forming at her temples from the effort required to control him, but she sensed the change immediately. Still violent, still angry, but no longer a wild beast sent to rip apart anyone in his path. You. She wasn't sure if she said it out loud or merely thought it. You are mine now. Get these two men on board the ship. His eyes flickered, loathing but restrained. Now! As he moved to lumber toward her, the rest of the howling ceased. Four faces peered at Cinder and the traitor. The thaumaturge snarled, but Cinder could barely see him. Bright spots were dancing in her vision. Her legs were beginning to shake from the effort of keeping herself standing while maintaining control of the man. He grabbed onto Wolf and Thorn by their wrists and began dragging them up the ramp, a puppet under her strings. But she could already feel the strings fraying. Hissing, she fell to one knee. Impressive. The thaumaturge's voice was muffled in her head. Behind her, her pawn dropped Wolf and Thorn onto the cargo bay floor. I can see why my queen fears you, but taking control of one of my pets will hardly save you now. She was so close. Get the soldier out of the ship. Get herself inside. She managed to bring him back to the edge, the very bottom of the ramp, before her hold on him snapped. She fell forward, clutching her temples, feeling as if 100 needles were being jabbed into her brain. It hadn't hurt like this to control anyone else. Had never hurt at all. The pain began to ease. She squinted. The thaumaturge was snarling at her, one arm clutching his stomach where the ramp had hit him. The rest of the soldiers were just standing there, their eyes still glowing but their expressions passive. And it occurred to Cinder that the thaumaturge was too hurt to keep control of them all, that even his hold on them was tenuous. But it didn't matter. She had no more strength. She sank back on her heels, letting her hands fall heavy at her sides. Her body swayed. She could feel unconsciousness calling to her, seeping into her brain. A grin once again creased the thaumaturge's lips, but this time it showed more relief than amusement. Troya, he said, go in and retrieve Mademoiselle Benoit. I will have to decide what is to be done with Alpha Keth. His eyes darted past Cinder at the same moment she heard a gunshot. The thaumaturge stumbled back, clutching his chest. Slipping onto her hip, Cinder glanced back to see Scarlet marching down the ramp, carrying a shotgun. Mademoiselle Benoit retrieved, she said, planting her heel on the back of the dazed, blank-faced soldier and shoving him off the ramp. And don't worry, we'll take Alpha Kessley off your hands. Sneering, the thaumaturge sank down to the ground. Blood began to dribble out between his fingers. Where did you get that? Cinder wheezed. One of your storage crates, Scarlet said. Come on, let's... A mix of emotions flickered through her eyes, writhing fury, startled confusion, emptiness. She lowered the barrel of the gun. Cinder cursed. Iko, the ramp! She said, crawling up onto the ramp and collapsing at Scarlet's feet. Reaching up, she snatched the gun away before the thaumaturge could turn it on either of them, and the ramp began to rise, dropping them both down into the cargo bay. An angry scream reached them, and then another chorus of howls that faded quickly away. The thaumaturge's last fading effort to control his pets. Cinder saw Scarlet shaking her head to rid herself of the fog before hauling herself to her feet.
Hold on to something if you can, Scarlet yelled as she hobbled into the cockpit. Ship, engage magnet lifters and rear thrusters!
Cinder sank exhausted onto the floor, still clutching the gun. Moments later, she felt the ship rising up away from the earth and whipping toward the sky.
Chapter 43. Kai was sweating with the effort not to throw up. His eyes stung, but he couldn't look away from the net screen. It was like watching a terrible horror production, too gruesome and fantastical to be real. The vidlink was being transferred from the downtown city square, where the weekly market and the annual festival had been held only days before, the day of his coronation. Bodies littered the square, their spilled blood black beneath the flickering billboards. Most of the corpses were concentrated near the opening of a late-night restaurant, one of the few businesses that had been open and crowded at midnight when the attack had started. He'd been told only one assailant had been in the restaurant at the time, but with the amount of carnage, he felt certain it had to be more. How could one man do so much damage? The feed switched to a hotel in Tokyo just as a man with crazed eyes threw a limp body against a pillar. Kai cringed at the impact and turned away. Turn it off. I can't watch anymore. Where are the police?
They are doing their best to stop the attacks, Your Majesty, said Torin from behind him. But it takes time to mobilize them and make an organized attempt to fight back. This attack was so unprecedented, so abnormal. These men move fast, rarely stay on a single block for more than a few minutes. Just enough time to kill anyone within reach before moving to another area of the city.
Torin trailed off, as if he heard the panic rising in his own voice and had to stop talking before it overwhelmed him. He cleared his throat.
Screen, show major global feeds.
Noise buzzed in the room. 6 news anchors reporting the same stories. Sudden attacks, murderous psychopaths, monsters, unknown fatalities, planet-wide mayhem. 4 cities had been struck inside the Commonwealth. New Beijing, Mumbai, Tokyo, and Manila. 10 more had fallen victim across the other 5 earthen countries. Mexico City, New York, Sao Paulo, Cairo, Lagos, London, Moscow, Paris, Istanbul, and Sydney. 14 cities in all. And though it was impossible to gain an exact number on the attackers, witness accounts noted that not more than 20 or 30 men seemed to be behind the attacks at each post. Kai struggled to do the math in his head. 300 men, maybe 400. It seemed impossible. As the death toll continued to rise, as the victimized cities began requesting assistance from their neighbors, shipping their injured to other hospitals. As many as 10,000 dead, some were saying. In the course of not 2 hours, and at the hands of only 300 or 400 men. 300 or 400 Lunars. Because he knew that Levana was behind this. In 2 of the attacked cities, survivors claimed they'd seen a royal thaumaturge in their midst. Though both witnesses had been near delusional with loss of blood, Kai believed them. It made sense that the queen's most prized minions would be involved in this. It made equal sense that they themselves were removed from the bloodshed, merely orchestrating the attacks through their own pawns. Kai paced away from the screen, rubbing his fingers into his eyes. This was because of him. Levana had done this because of him. Him and Cinder.
This is war, said Queen Camilla of the United Kingdom. She's declared war on us.
Kai slumped against the desk. They'd all been so silent, entranced by the ongoing footage, that he'd forgotten he was still in a global conference with the other union leaders. The voice of Africa's Prime Minister Cayman sounded through the speakers, seething.
First 15 years of the plague, and now this. And for what? Levana is upset that a single prisoner got away? A mere girl? No, she's using it as an excuse. She means to make a mockery of us.
I'm having all of my major cities evacuated immediately, said President Vargas of America. We can at least attempt to staunch the bleeding.
European Prime Minister Bromstad chimed in.
Before you go that route, I'm afraid I have yet more unsettling news.
Kai's chin fell onto his chest, defeated. He was tempted to cover his ears and not listen. He didn't want to hear any more, but he braced himself instead.
The attack is not only in the major metropolises, said Bromstad. I've just been informed that in addition to Paris, Moscow, and Istanbul, we've had one small town attacked as well, Rieux, a farming community in southern France, population 3,800.
3,800, said Queen Camilla. Why would she attack such a small town?
To confuse us, said Governor General Williams from Australia, to make us believe there's no sense to these attacks, to make us afraid that she could strike anywhere, at any time. It is precisely something Levana would do.
Chairman Hui burst into Kai's office without knocking. Kai jumped, for a moment thinking that the chairman was a lunatic come to kill him, before his pulse began to subside again. Any news? Hui nodded. Kai noticed that his face had aged years in the last week.
Lin Cinder has been spotted.
Kai swallowed a gasp and shoved himself off the desk.
What? Who's that speaking? Said Camilla. What about Lin Cinder?
I must tend to other matters, said Kai. End conference.
Sounds of protest were immediately silenced, and Kai focused on the chairman, every nerve humming.
Well? Three military officers managed to track her, using a positive ID on her deceased stepsister, Lin Peony, just like her guardian said we would. We found her in a small town in southern France, minutes before the attack.
Southern?
Kai glanced at Torn, just as his advisor shut his eyes, wearied by the same realization.
Was it a town called Rieux?
Hui's eyes widened.
How did you know?
Kai groaned and rounded to the back of his desk.
Levana's men attacked Rieux, the only non-major city they went after. They must have been able to track her, too. That's why they were there.
We must alert the other Union leaders, said Torn. At least we know she isn't attacking at random.
But how did they find her? Her sister's ID chip was our only lead. How else could she be...
He trailed off, yanking both hands through his hair.
Of course. She knew about the chip. I'm such an idiot. Your Majesty?
He spun back toward Hui, but it was Torin that caught his eye.
Don't you say this is paranoia. She is listening. I don't know how she does it, but she is spying on us. This very office is probably bugged. That's how she knew about the chip. That's how she knew when my office was open and she could barge in here unannounced. That's how she knew when my father died!
Torin's expression darkened, but for once, he made no snide comment about Kai and his ridiculous theories.
So, we've found her then, Cinder?
Embarrassment flickered over Hui's brow.
I'm sorry, Your Majesty. Once the attacks began, she managed to get away in the chaos. We found the ID chip on a farm outside of Rieux, next to signs of a ship's takeoff. We're working on rounding up anyone who might have seen her, but unfortunately, all three officers who first identified her were killed in the attack.
Kai began to shake, his entire body burning up from the inside out. He cast furious eyes up to the ceiling, half screaming.
Well, see that, Your Majesty? If it wasn't for your attack, we would have had her! I hope you're pleased with yourself!
Huffing, he crossed his arms over his chest and waited for his blood pressure to drop again.
Enough of this! Call off the search!
Your Majesty,
said Torin.
I want all available military and enforcement officers focused on finding these men who are attacking us and putting an end to this. That's our new priority.
As if relieved by the decision, Hui gave a curt bow and clipped out of the office, leaving the door open in his wake.
Your Majesty,
said Torin. While I don't disagree with this course of action, we have to consider how Levana will react. We should consider the possibility that this attack, awful as it is only an annoyance compared to what she is truly capable of. Perhaps we should attempt to placate her before she can do any further damage.
I know. Kai faced the screen and the muttering, frightened news anchors. I haven't forgotten those pictures that the American Republic had.
The memory still sent a chill down his back. Hundreds of soldiers standing in formation, each one a cross between a man and a beast, protruding fangs and enormous claws, hunched shoulders and a fine layer of fur up their broad arms. The men who were attacking all over Earth were vicious and wild and brutal. That much was clear. But they were still only men. Kai suspected they were just the precursor to what Levana's beast army could become. And he'd thought he couldn't loathe her any more, not after she'd purposely withheld the Letimosis antidote from him, or attacked one of his servants to prove a political point, or forced him to betray Cinder for no other reason than she'd escaped from Luna years ago. But he could not have fathomed this cruelty. Which is why he would forever hate himself for what he was about to do.
Torn, will you give me a moment?
Your Majesty.
Torn's eyes were wrinkled in the corner, as if carved into his skin. Perhaps they'd all aged unfairly this week.
You want me to leave?
He bit the inside of his cheek and nodded. Torn's lips perched, but it seemed a long time before he could form any words. Kai could see knowledge on his advisor's face. Torin knew what he was planning.
Your Majesty, are you sure you don't wish to discuss this? Let me offer guidance. Let me help you.
Kai tried to smile, but it came out nothing more than a painful grimace.
I can't stand here, safe in this palace, and not do anything. I can't let her kill anyone else. Not with these monsters, not by withholding the Letimosis antidote, not by whatever she has planned next. We both know what she wants. We both know what will stop this.
Then let me stay and support you, Your Majesty.
He shook his head. This isn't a good choice for the Commonwealth. It may be the only choice, but it will never be a good one. He fidgeted with his collar. The Commonwealth should not be able to blame anyone but me. Please go. He saw Torin take in a slow, painful breath before bowing deeply.
I will be right outside should you need me, Your Majesty.
Looking supremely unhappy about it, Torin left, shutting the door behind him. Kai paced before the net screen, his gut twisting with anxiety. He straightened his shirt, wrinkled from a long day, but at least he'd still been in his office when the alert had come. He believed he might never experience a full night of sleep again after this, after what he was about to do. In his frenzied thoughts, he couldn't help thinking of Cinder at the ball. How happy he'd been to see her descending the stairs into the ballroom. How innocently amused he'd been at her rain-drenched hair and wrinkled dress, thinking it was a fitting look for the city's most renowned mechanic. He'd thought she must be immune to society's whims of fashion and decorum, so comfortable in her own skin that she could come to a royal ball as the emperor's own guest with messy hair and oil stains on her gloves and keep her head high as she did so. That was before he knew that she'd rushed to the ball to give him a warning. Cinder had sacrificed her own safety to plead with him not to accept the alliance, not to marry Levana. Because after the marriage ceremony was done, and she had ascended to the throne of the Eastern Commonwealth, Levana intended to kill him. He felt sick to his stomach, knowing that Cinder was right. He knew that Levana wouldn't hesitate to dispose of him as soon as he'd served his purpose. But he had to stop these murders. He had to stop this war. Cinder was not the only one capable of sacrificing herself for something greater. Inhaling, exhaling, he faced the screen. Establish vidlink to Queen Levana of Luna. The small globe in the corner turned over only once before it brightened with the image of the Lunar Queen, draped in her lacy white veil. He imagined her face old and haggard and decrepit beneath its sheath, and it didn't help. Kai sensed she'd been waiting for his calm. He sensed she'd been listening in on everything and already knew precisely what his intentions were. He sensed she was smirking behind the veil.
"My dear Emperor Kato, what a pleasant surprise. It must be quite late in New Beijing, about 2 hours and 24 minutes past midnight. Is that correct?"
He swallowed his disgust as best he could and opened his hands wide to her.
"Your Majesty, I beg you, please stop this attack. Please call off your soldiers."
The veil shifted as she listed her head to the side.
"You beg me? How delightful. Do go on."
Heat flooded his face.
"Innocent people are dying, women and children, bystanders, people who haven't done anything to you. You've won and you know it. So please, end it now."
"You say I've won, but what is my prize, young emperor?
Have you captured the cyborg girl who started all this? She is the one you should be appealing to. If she turns herself over to me, then I will call off my men. That is my offer. Do let me know when you are prepared to bargain with me. Until then, good night."
"Wait!"
She folded her hands.
"Yes?"
His pulse thrummed painfully against his temples.
"I can't give you the girl. We thought we had her, but she's gotten away again, as I suspect you already know. But I can't let you continue to murder innocent Earthens while we try and find another way to track her."
"I'm afraid that's not my problem, Your Majesty."
"There's something else you want, something I can offer. We both know what that is."
"I'm sure I don't know what you speak of."
Kai didn't realize he was gripping his hands, practically pleading with her, until his knuckles started to ache.
"If your offer of a marriage alliance still stands, I accept. Your prize for calling off your men will be the Commonwealth."
His voice broke on the final word, and he clamped his jaw shut. He waited, breathless, knowing that every second that passed meant more bloodshed on the streets of Earth. After an agonizing silence, Lavanna tittered.
"My dear Emperor, how could I resist such a charming proposal?"
Chapter 44. As the ship entered neutral orbit, Scarlet released the air from her burning lungs and slumped into the pilot's seat. Moaning, all the aches and wounds catching up to her at once, she turned herself around to face the ship's bay. Lynn Cinder was sitting on the floor with her legs splayed out before her. Wolf, unconscious, was spread eagle on his back. A streak of blood followed him from the ramp where he'd been dragged. The other man was flopped onto his stomach.
"You're a pilot," said Cinder.
"Lynn Cinder. Princess Celine."
"My grandma taught me. She was a pilot in..."
The words evaporated, her heart aching.
"But your ship does pretty well on its own."
"So glad to be of service," said the disembodied voice. "I'm Aiko. Is anyone hurt?"
"Everyone's hurt," said Cinder, groaning.
Scarlet hobbled over to Wolf's body and sank down beside him.
"Are they going to be all right?"
"I hope so," said Cinder. "But I've never stuck around long enough to see the after effects of these darts."
Scarlet unzipped her shredded hoodie and tied it over the open wound on Wolf's arm.
"You said you had bandages?"
She could see Cinder's dread at being forced into action again. But soon, Cinder pushed herself up and disappeared through a door on the far side of the cargo bay. A low moan drew her attention to the stranger. He rolled onto his back, cringing.
"Where are we?"
he muttered.
"Oh, you're awake already," said Cinder, returning with the salve and gauze.
"I was hoping you'd stay knocked out a while longer,"
The peace and quiet was a pleasant change. Despite her tone, Scarlet could sense the relief rolling off the girl as she dropped a tube of salve onto the man's stomach. She passed the gauze to Scarlet, along with another tube of salve and a scalpel.
We need to cut out your ID chips and destroy them before they track you.
Easing to a seated position, the man gave Scarlet a hazy, suspicious look, and she thought for a moment he'd forgotten where she'd come from, before his attention dropped down to Wolf.
Managed to get the loon on board, huh? Maybe I can find a cage for him in one of these bins. I'd hate for him to kill us in our sleep after all that.
Scarlet scowled, unraveling a strip of gauze.
He's not an animal, she said, focusing on the claw marks on the side of Wolf's face.
Are you sure?
I hate to agree with Thorn, said Cinder. I mean, I really hate to agree with him, but he's right. We don't know that he's on our side.
Scarlet pressed her lips and pulled out another strip of tape. You'll see when he wakes up. He's not...
She hesitated and realized a moment later that she couldn't even convince herself that he was on their side.
Well, said the man, I feel much better.
Tearing a hole in his pants, he dabbed the ointment on the puncture wound from the tranquilizer. Pulling her hair out of her face, Scarlet ripped open Wolf's shirt and slathered the medical salve onto the deep gashes across his abdomen.
Who are you?
Captain Carswell Thorn.
Recapping the salve, he propped himself against the cargo bay's wall. His hand landed on the shotgun.
Where did this come from?
Scarlet found it in one of the crates, said Cinder, facing the net screen on the wall.
Screen on. The screen showed a shaking image of a bloodied man running full speed toward the camera. There was screaming, and then static. A male anchorman behind the desk replaced the video, his face pale.
This footage fed to us from the attacks in Manhattan earlier tonight, and sources have confirmed that more than a dozen cities across the Union are also under siege.
Scarlet bent over to cut the ID chip from Wolf's wrist. She noticed he already had a scar there, as though it hadn't been very long ago when the ID chip had been put in him to begin with. The anchorman continued.
Citizens are urged to stay in their homes and lock all doors and windows. We are now going to a live feed from Capital City, where President Vargas will be making an address.
A groan drew everyone's attention to Wolf. From the corner of her eye, Scarlet saw Captain Thorn cock the gun and level the barrel at Wolf's chest. Scarlet set aside the scalpel and both their ID chips and tilted Wolf's face toward her.
Are you all right?
He lifted bleary eyes to her, before suddenly wrenching away and rolling onto his side, vomiting onto the ship's floor. Scarlet winced.
Sorry, said Cinder. That's probably a side effect of the drugs.
Thorn gagged.
Aces. I'm glad that didn't happen to me. How embarrassing.
Swiping at his lips, Wolf collapsed again onto his back, cringing with every movement. He furrowed his brow, then squinted up at Scarlet. His eyes had returned to their normal, vibrant green, no longer filled with animal hunger.
You're alive.
She tucked a curl behind her ear, baffled at her own relief. This was the man who had handed her over to those monsters. She should have hated him, but all she could think of was his desperation when he'd kissed her on the train, when he'd begged her not to go looking for her grandmother.
Thanks to you.
Thorn scoffed.
Thanks to him?
Wolf tried to look at Thorn, but couldn't twist his neck enough.
Where are we?
You're aboard a cargo ship orbiting Earth, said Cinder.
Sorry about the whole tranquilizer thing. I thought you were going to eat her.
I thought I was too.
His expression darkened as he took in Cinder's metal hand.
I think my queen is looking for you.
Thorn quirked an eyebrow.
Was that supposed to make me feel better about having him on board?
He's better now, Scarlet said. Aren't you?
He shook his head.
You shouldn't have brought me here. I'll only put you all in danger. You should have left me down there. You should have killed me.
Thorn released the safety on the gun.
Don't be ridiculous, said Scarlet. They did this to you. It's not your fault.
Wolf eyed her like he was speaking to a stubborn child.
Scarlet, if anything happened to you because of me...
Do you intend to harm anyone aboard this ship or not? Said Cinder, cutting through their conversation.
Wolf blinked at her, at Thorn, then at Scarlet, his eyes lingering.
No,
he whispered. 3 heartbeats later, Cinder's body relaxed.
He's telling the truth.
What? Said Thorn. And that's supposed to make me feel better?
Kai is going to make an announcement!
Iko's voice blared through the ship. Then the volume of the net screen rose. An anchor was speaking again.
Appears that all attacks have ceased. We will keep you posted as news develops. Now we connect you to the feed from the Eastern Commonwealth where we are expecting an emergency announcement from Emperor Kaito to begin.
He was cut off. The screen turning to the EC's press room, where Kai stood behind a podium. Cinder bunched the material of her pants in both fists.
Cinder has a bit of a crush on him,
Thornstage whispered.
Don't we all, said Iko.
Kai seemed momentarily disconcerted beneath the bright lights, but it passed as he squared his shoulders.
You all know why I have called this press conference in the middle of the night, and I thank you for coming on such short notice. I hope to answer some of the questions that have been posed since these attacks began nearly 3.5 hours ago.
Wolf hissed in pain as he sat up to see better. Scarlet's fingers tightened around his hand.
I can confirm that these men are from Luna. Some of our scientists have already begun conducting tests on the body of one of these men, killed by a police officer in Tokyo, and have confirmed that they are genetically engineered soldiers. They appear to be lunar males whose physical makeup has been combined with the neural circuitry of some sort of wolf hybrid. It seems clear that their surprise attack was orchestrated in a way to ensure terror, confusion, and chaos throughout Earth's major cities. In this, I feel it is safe to say they succeeded. Many of you are aware that Queen Lavanna has been threatening to declare war on Earth for nearly her entire rule. If you are wondering why Queen Lavanna chose now to initiate this attack after so many years of threats, it is because of me.
Scarlet noticed Cinder pulling her knees into her chest, squeezing them until her arms began to shake.
Queen Lavanna is angry at my inability to adhere to a treaty between Luna and Earth that states that all lunar fugitives be apprehended and returned to Luna. Queen Lavanna made her expectations quite clear in this regard, and I failed to meet them.
A strange sound escaped Cinder's throat, a squeak or a whimper, and she clamped her metal hand over her mouth to stifle it.
Because of this, I feel it is my responsibility to end these attacks and prevent a full-scale war so long as it is within my power to do so. So that is what I've done, in the only way I could.
His gaze pierced the back wall of the press room, as if he were too mortified to look any of the journalists in the eye.
I have accepted an alliance of marriage with Queen Lavanna of Luna.
A shocked scream ripped from Cinder, and she launched herself to her feet.
No! No!
In return, Kai continued, Queen Lavanna has agreed to withhold further attacks. The wedding has been scheduled for the next full moon, the 25th day of September, to be followed immediately by Queen Lavanna's coronation as Empress of the Eastern Commonwealth. The removal of all lunar soldiers from Earth and soil will begin the following day.
No!
Cinder screeched. Grabbing the boot off her foot, she heaved it at the screen.
Idiot! You idiot!
My cabinet and I will have further updates in the coming days. I will not be taking any questions tonight. Thank you.
The room filled with barking questions regardless, but Kai ignored them all, slinking off the platform like a defeated general. Cinder spun away and kicked the nearest crate with her bare metal foot.
He knows this was her doing, but he's still going to give her everything she wants. She is responsible for the deaths of thousands of Earthens, and now she's going to be Empress.
She paced the floor, spotted the two bloodied ID chips beside Scarlet and mercilessly stomped them to pieces, grinding them into the floor with her heel.
And how long will she be satisfied with that? A month? A week? I even told him! I told him she was planning on using the Commonwealth as a stepping stone to wage war on the rest of Earth! And he's still going to marry her! She's going to have complete control over all of us, and it will be all his fault!
Scarlet crossed her arms over her chest.
It sounds to me,
she said, her voice rising to compete with Cinder's,
that it will be all your fault!
Cinder's tirade ceased as she gaped at Scarlet. Between them, Thorn settled his chin on his palm as if watching a great show, though his free hand still held the shotgun aimed at Wolf's head.
You know why she did this, said Scarlet, climbing to her feet despite the protests of her angry muscles. You know why she's after you!
Cinder's fury simmered off.
Your grandmother told you?
Yes, she did. And what sickens me is that you let this happen in the first place!
Glowering, Cinder bent down and ripped off her other boot. Scarlet shied away, but Cinder only tossed it into a corner.
What would you rather I did? Just hand myself over? Sacrifice myself in hopes that would satisfy her? It would have come to this anyway. I'm not talking about when you're arrested at the ball. I mean before that. Why haven't you done anything to stop her? People are relying on you. People think you can make a difference. And what are you doing? Running away and hiding. My grandmother didn't die so you could live as a fugitive. Too much a coward to do something.
I'm confused, said Thorn, raising a finger in the air. What are we talking about?
Scarlet glanced at the captain.
Would you stop pointing that gun at him?
Thorn tossed the gun to the side and folded his hands in his lap.
He doesn't even know, does he?
Scarlet rounded on Cinder.
You've put his life in danger, all of our lives in danger, and he doesn't even know why.
It's more complicated than that,
is it? I haven't even known for a week. I found out who I was the day after the ball, when I was sitting in a jail cell preparing to be handed over to Lavanna like a trophy. So, between breaking out of prison and running from the entire Commonwealth military and trying to save your life, I haven't had much time to overthrow an entire regime. I'm sorry if I've disappointed you, but what do you want me to do?
Scarlet drew back, a headache pounding at her temple.
How could you not have known?
Because your grandmother shipped me off to the Commonwealth without bothering to tell me.
But isn't that why you're at the ball?
Stars, no. You think I would have been stupid enough to face Lavanna if I'd known the truth?
She hesitated.
Well, I don't know. For Kai, maybe, but...
She grasped her head with both hands.
I don't know. I didn't know.
Scarlet was suddenly dizzy from the anger, the rush of blood, the exhaustion. The only response she could form was a baffled,
Oh.
Thorn coughed. I'm still confused. With a sigh, Cinder wilted onto a crate, staring down at her mismatched hands. She scrunched her whole face up, like preparing for a blow, and muttered,
I'm Princess Selene.
Thorn snorted, and they all turned to him. He blinked.
What? Really?
Really. The joking smile froze on his lips. A heavy silence was followed by a vibration beneath their feet, and Iko's voice.
I don't compute.
That makes two of us, said Thorn.
Since when?
Cinder shrugged.
I'm sorry, I should have told you, but I didn't know if I could trust you, and I thought if I could find Michelle Benoit and have her explain some things to me, tell me how I came to be here, how I came to be this.
She held up both hands before letting them fall limply back into her lap.
Then maybe I could start figuring things out.
She sighed.
Iko, I'm really sorry. I swear I didn't know before.
Snapping his jaw shut, Thorn scratched at his chin.
You're Princess Selene.
he said, testing the words. The crazy cyborg girl is Princess Selene.
Is your gift intact?
Wolf asked. He was sitting crookedly, trying not to put too much weight on his side.
I think so, said Cinder, shifting uncomfortably. I'm still learning how to use it. She controlled one of the special operatives, said Scarlet. I saw her do it.
Cinder glanced down. Only barely, I couldn't maintain control.
You were able to manipulate one of the pack while JL was there?
Yeah, but it was awful. I could only get to one of them, and I nearly passed out. A sharp laugh silenced her, before Wolf coughed painfully. Still, an amused expression lingered on his face.
And this is why Lavanna wants you. You are stronger than she is, or you could be, with practice.
Cinder shook her head.
You don't understand. That Thaumaturge had 7 men under his control, and I could barely manage one. I'm nowhere near as strong as them. No, you don't understand, said Wolf. Each pack is ruled by a Thaumaturge who controls when our animal instincts take over, when all we can think about is killing. They've manipulated our lunar gift and used it to turn us into these monsters instead, with some physical modifications. But it's all connected to our master. Most lunars can't control us at all. We might as well be shells to them. And even our masters, who could control hundreds of average citizens at once, can only keep hold of 12 or so operatives. That's why our packs are kept so small. Do you see?
No, said Cinder and Thorn at once. Wolf was still smiling.
Even the most talented of Thaumaturges can only control 12 operatives, 15 at the most, and this after years of genetic modifications and training. And yet you managed to take one away from his master on your first attempt? With some practice.
He looked like he wanted to laugh.
I would not have thought it before, but now I think Her Majesty might actually have cause to be afraid of you, Princess.
Cinder flinched. Don't call me that.
I am assuming, of course, you do mean to fight against her, continued Wolf, judging from your response to your Emperor's announcement.
Cinder shook her head.
I don't have the first idea how to. I don't know anything about being a ruler or a leader or...
But plenty of people think you can stop her, said Scarlet. My grandmother died so you could have this chance. I'm not going to let her sacrifice be wasted.
And I would help you, added Wolf. You could practice your abilities on me.
He slumped, his body tired from sitting up for too long.
Besides, if you are who you claim to be, that makes you my true queen. Therefore, you have my loyalty.
Cinder shook her head and hopped off the crate again.
I don't want your loyalty.
Scarlet planted her hands on her hips.
What do you want?
I want
some time to think about this and figure out what to do next without everybody yapping in my ear.
Cinder stomped off toward the main corridor, every other step a loud clang as her metal foot struck the floor. When she had gone, Thorn let out a low whistle.
I know, she seems a little...
Crossing his eyes, he swirled both fingers around his ears.
But it's really part of her charm, once you get to know her.
Chapter 45. She'd had the bridge built for herself out of very special glass, so that she could watch her soldiers from above, watch them train, watch them fight, watch them adapt to their new mutations, all without being observed herself. She was intrigued now by a new pack who had just completed the genetic transformation a few days ago. They were still so young, mere boys. Not one older than 12 years. They were almost precious, the way some of them stood off from the group, constantly checking the fine fur of their knuckles, bouncing back and forth on their restructured limbs, while others were already brawling and taunting one another, making their place, choosing their hierarchy, just like the animals they were. Each thaumaturge beckoned to their assigned subjects, leading them through various formations. This, too, always fascinated her. How some of them would force the control, while others tried to seduce it from their cubs, like tender mothers. She watched the youngest faction with growing pleasure. 7 had lined up without question, leaving only 1 cub standing off from the rest. Crouched on all 4s, he was snarling at his thaumaturge. Fangs fully bared, more wolf-like than any of them. Rebellion and hatred glowed behind his golden eyes. That one would make an alpha, she could already tell.
Your Majesty?
She lifted her head but didn't take her eyes off the boy.
Sybil.
Her head thaumaturge's heels clicked on the glass floor. She detected the ruffle of fabric as Sybil bowed. Down in the cave, the cub was prowling a circle around his mistress, a young, blonde-haired girl who looked ghastly pale in her black coat. Her expression held a trace of anxiety, a tinge of doubt that she would have the mental strength to control this one. All special operatives have been temporarily relieved from their missions and returned to concealment status. We estimate 260 operative deaths. The Earthens will notice the tattoos soon, if they haven't already. Be sure they take care to mask them well.
Of course, Your Majesty. I'm afraid I also have 1 thaumaturge death to report.
Lavanna looked up, for a moment, expecting to catch Sybil's reflection in the glass, but there was none. Not in this window. Not in any of the royal windows. She'd made sure of that, and yet, after all these years, she still wasn't entirely used to it. She raised an eyebrow, prompting Sybil to continue.
Thaumaturge J.L., he was shot in the chest.
J.L.? It isn't like him to abandon his sanctuary, even in battle.
One of his betas has informed me that Lynn Cinder presented herself. It seems he was attempting to apprehend her personally.
Lavanna's nostrils flared, and she turned back toward the training grounds, just as the young cub lunged for his mistress. The girl screamed and fell onto her back before her entire body seized up in concentration. Even from her overlook, Lavanna could see beads of sweat forming on the girl's brow, sliding across her temple. The cub opened his mouth, teeth glinting, then hesitated. Lavanna couldn't tell what was fighting his animal instinct, the thaumaturge grasping for control, or the remnants of a lunar boy still clinging to the thoughts in his head.
Jael's pack has already disbanded, except for the 1 beta who was found inside the Paris stronghold. I will send thaumaturge Amory to retrieve them.
The cub fell off his mistress, curling into a ball on his side, trembling, whimpering, in obvious pain. Unsteady herself, the thaumaturge climbed to her feet and brushed the black regolith dust from her jacket. The regolith dust was everywhere in these caves, naturally created lava tubes that would never be clear, no matter how long they continued to develop and build within them. Lavanna hated the dust, the way it clung to her hair and nails, filled up her lungs. She avoided the tubes whenever she could, preferring to stay in the bright, glistening dome that housed Luna's capital and her palace.
Your Majesty, said Sybil.
No, don't send Amory, she said, her attention glued to the cub as he writhed in pain, still fighting his mistress's control, still struggling to keep his own mind. Still wanting to be a little boy. Not a soldier. Not a monster. Not a pawn. Let JL's pack go. The special operatives have served their purpose. Finally, the cub stopped twitching. The fine fur on his cheeks was wet with tears as he lay there, panting. His mistress's gaze was fierce, as animalistic as her charges. Lavanna could almost hear the woman's orders, even though no words were being spoken. Telling him to get up, to join the line, to obey her. The boy did, moving slowly, painfully. He lifted himself up onto his slender legs and shuffled into the line, head bowed, shoulders hunched, like a scolded dog.
These soldiers are nearly ready, Lavanna said. Their genetic modifications are complete. Their thaumaturges are prepared.
The next time we strike against Earth, these men will be leading the attack, and there will be no disguising them.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Sybil bowed. This time, Lavanna felt the respect rolling off her as much as heard it.
And may I also wish you my warmest congratulations on your engagement, my queen.
Lavanna's left hand curled, her thumb running over the polished stone band on her finger. She always hid it in her glamour. She wasn't sure that anyone alive knew she still wore it. She herself so often forgot that it was there, but her finger was tingling tonight, since Emperor Kaito's acceptance of a marriage alliance.
Thank you, Sybil. That will be all.
Another bow, then the retreating footsteps. Below, the factions were beginning to disband, their training over for the day. The thaumaturges led them off through separate caves into the natural labyrinth beneath Luna's surface. It was peculiar to watch these men and boys, these creatures that had been only an experiment in her parents' time, but had become a reality under her rule. An army faster and stronger than any other army. The intelligence of men, the instincts of wolves, the pliability of children. They made her nervous, a feeling she hadn't experienced for many years. So many Lunars, with such peculiar brainwaves that even she could not control them all. Not at once. These beasts, these scientific creations, would never love her. Not like the people of Luna loved her. Not like the people of Earth would soon come to. Chapter 46. Scarlet cried for hours, curled up on the bottom bunk of her new crew quarters. Each sob pulsed through her aching muscles, but the pain only made her cry harder with the memory of it all. The adrenaline and anger and denial had fallen away while she'd been digging through the dresser and had found a military uniform folded neatly in the bottom drawer. Though the American uniform was all gray and white, instead of the mix of blues found on European pilots, it still looked remarkably like the clothes her grandma had worn in her military days. She'd clutched the plain white t-shirt to her and cried into it for so long, it was almost as soiled as the clothes she was supposed to be changing out of. Her entire body was throbbing as the tears finally began to dry up. Gasping for breath, she rolled onto her back and wiped the last streaks away with the cotton. Every time her crying had started to subside before, the words would echo in her head, "Grandmère is gone," and send her into another torrent. But the words were becoming hollow, the sting fading into numbness. Her stomach growled. Groaning, Scarlet settled a hand on top of it, wondering if she just shut her eyes and went to sleep, would her body forget that it hadn't eaten in more than a day? But as she lay there, willing the numbness to take over, her stomach rumbled again, louder. Scarlet sniffed, annoyed. Grabbing hold of the bunk overhead, she pulled herself to sitting. Her head swam with dizziness and dehydration, but she managed to stumble to the door. She heard a crash from the galley as soon as she pulled it open. Peering down the hallway, she saw Wolf hunkered over a counter, holding a tin can. Stepping into the galley's light, Scarlet saw that the can was labeled with a picture of tomatoes. Judging from the enormous dents in its side, Wolf had been trying to open it with a meat tenderizer. He glanced up at her, and she was glad that she wasn't the only one red-faced.
"Why would they put food in here if they were going to make it so hard to open?"
She bit her lip against a weak smile, not sure if it was from pity or amusement.
"Did you try a can opener?"
At Wolf's blank expression, she stepped around the table and rifled through the top drawer.
"We Earthens have all sorts of special tools like this," she said, emerging with the can opener.
She clamped it around the can's lid and slowly twisted it open. Wolf's ears glowed pink as he curled back the lid and frowned down at the bright red goop.
"That's not what I was expecting."
"They're not farm fresh like you've become accustomed to. But we're just going to have to make do."
Digging through the cabinet, Scarlet cobbled together a can of olives and a jar of marinated artichoke hearts.
Here, we'll have an antipasto.
She felt the lightest touch against her hair and ducked away. Wolf's hand dropped down, gripping the edge of the counter.
I'm sorry, you had your hair.
Setting down the jars, Scarlet felt for the back of her hair, finding it knotted and tangled as a haystack. She shoved the olives at Wolf.
Why don't you give the can opener a try?
Mindlessly picking at the tangles, she found a fork and sat down at the long table. It had years of military personnel initials carved into the top, reminding her of her prison cell in the opera house. Though being on the ship was immeasurably better than being stuck in that basement, the confinement of it still pressed in around her, almost suffocating. She knew that her grandma had probably been stationed on a similar ship during her time in the military. No wonder she'd retired to a farm, with all the sky and a horizon a person could want. She hoped that Emily was still taking care of the animals. When she couldn't find any more knots, she smoothed down her hair with both hands, then twisted open the jar of artichokes. Glancing up, she saw that Wolf was still standing with the olives and tomatoes clasped in each hand.
Are you all right?
His eyes flashed. Panic, she thought. Maybe fear.
Why did you bring me here? He said. Why didn't you just leave me?
Looking down, she speared an artichoke and watched the oil drizzle back into the jar.
I don't know. I didn't exactly stop to weigh the pros and cons.
She let the artichoke heart plop back down into the marinade.
But it didn't feel right to leave you there.
He turned his back on her, setting the cans on the counter, and picked up the can opener. On the third try, he managed to clip it to the olive can's lid and twist it around the edge.
Why didn't you tell me the truth? Said Scarlet. Before we got to Paris.
It wouldn't have mattered.
He set the open cans on the table.
You still would have insisted on going after your grandmother.
I thought I could plead your case with J.L. and convince him that you were useless to us, that he should let you go. But I could only do that if I was still loyal to them.
Scarlet stabbed the artichoke heart again and slipped it into her mouth. She didn't want to go over the what-ifs. She didn't want to linger on all the choices that could have ended with her and her grandmother safely back on the farm. She didn't even know if such choices had existed. Dropping his gaze, Wolf eased himself onto the bench opposite her, grimacing in pain at each movement. Settled, he picked a tomato from the can and stuffed it into his mouth. His nose crinkled. He looked like he was choking down a worm as he swallowed. Scarlet pressed her lips against a chuckle.
Makes you appreciate my garden tomatoes, doesn't it?
I appreciated everything you gave me.
He picked up the can of olives and sniffed at them, wary of being tricked again.
Although, I didn't deserve any of it.
Scarlet bit her lip. She didn't think he was referring to the produce. Dipping her head, she dunked her fork into the can of olives Wolf was holding, managing to spear two on its tines. They ate in silence, Wolf discovering he liked the olives and suffering through two more soppy tomatoes before Scarlet offered him an artichoke. The combination of the two, they discovered, bordered on acceptable.
Some bread would be nice, Scarlet said, scanning the open shelves behind Wolf that showed mismatched plates and coffee mugs painted with the American Republic insignia.
I'm so sorry.
Goosebumps scattered across her arms. She dared to look at him, but he was staring at the can of tomatoes, nearly crunching it in his fists.
I took you away from everything you cared about, and your grandmother. Don't, Wolf. Don't do this. We can't change what happened, and you did give me that chip. You did save me from Ran.
He hunched his shoulders. Half his hair was messy and wild and normal, the other half still matted down with dried blood.
Jael told me he was going to torture you. He thought it would make your grandmother talk.
And I just couldn't.
Scarlet shuddered, closing her eyes.
I knew they would kill me when they found out, but...
He struggled for words, releasing a sharp breath.
I think I realized that I would rather die because I betrayed them than live because I betrayed you.
Scarlet wiped her oily fingers on her jeans.
I was going back for you and your grandmother when I saw you being chased by Ran. My head was so jumbled, I couldn't think straight. I honestly don't know if I meant to help you both or kill you. Then, when Ran threw you at the statue, something just...
His knuckles whitened. He shook his head, spikes of hair flailing.
It doesn't matter. I was too late.
You saved me.
You wouldn't have needed saving if it wasn't for me.
Oh, so if you hadn't been chosen to bring me to them or find out what information I had, they would have left me alone?
No. If it had been anyone but you, I would be dead by now.
Wolf frowned at the table.
And I don't believe for a second you were coming back to kill us, no matter how much control the Thaumaturge had over you. It was still you in there. You weren't going to hurt me.
Wolf met her gaze, sad and bewildered.
I honestly hope we never have to test that theory again, because you don't know how close I was.
You still fought it.
His face contorted, but she was glad when he didn't argue with her.
It shouldn't have been possible to resist him like that. What they did to us, to our brains, it changed the way we think about things. Anger and violence come so quickly, but other things, it shouldn't even be possible.
His hands started to move toward hers, but halted halfway. He quickly withdrew, fiddling with the battered tomato label instead.
Well, what if...
Scarlet listed her head.
You said they control when your animal instincts will overpower your own thoughts, right? But fighting and hunting aren't the only instincts wolves have. Aren't wolves monogamous, for starters?
Her cheek started to burn, and she had to look away, scratching her fork into a set of initials.
And isn't the alpha male the one who's responsible for protecting everyone? Not only the pack, but his mate, too?
Dropping the fork, she threw her hands into the air.
I'm not saying I think you and I are, after just... I know we just met, and that's...
But it's not out of the question, is it? That your instincts to protect me could be as strong as your instincts to kill?
She held her breath and dared to look up. Wolf was gaping at her openly, and for a second, he seemed almost mortified. But then, he grinned, the look warm and bewildered. Scarlet caught a glimpse of his sharp canines, her stomach flipping at the sight of them.
You could be right, he said. That makes some sense. On Luna, we're kept so far removed from the rest of the citizenry that there's never any chance of falling in...
Scarlet was glad when he started to blush, too. He scratched his ear.
Maybe that's it. Maybe Jael's control worked against him, because my instincts were telling me to protect you.
Scarlet attempted a nonchalant smile.
There you have it. As long as there's an alpha female nearby, you should be just fine. That shouldn't be hard to find, right?
Wolf's expression iced over and he looked away. His tone became uneasy again.
I know you must want nothing to do with me. I don't blame you.
Wolf scrunched up his shoulders and met her with an expression full of regret.
But you're the only one, Scarlet. You'll always be the only one.
Her pulse fluttered.
Wolf, I know we met less than a week ago, and in that time I've done nothing but lie and cheat and betray you. I know, but if you give me a chance, all I want is to protect you, to be near you for as long as I'm able.
Biting her lip, she reached forward, pulling his fingers away from the can. She found that the label had been shredded beneath his mindless fidgeting.
Wolf, are you asking me to be your alpha female?
He hesitated. Scarlet couldn't help it. She burst into laughter.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was mean. I know I shouldn't tease you about this.
Still grinning, she made to retract her hand, but he was suddenly gripping it, refusing to relinquish the touch.
You just look so scared, like I'm going to disappear at any minute. We're stuck on a spaceship, Wolf. I'm not going anywhere.
His lips twitched, his nervousness beginning to ease away, though his hand stayed tense over hers.
"Alpha female," he murmured.
"I sort of like that." Beaming, Scarlet gave a mild shrug. "It could grow on me." Chapter 47. Cinder lay on her back, staring up into the guts of the Rampian's engine. Only her cyborg hand moved, flipping the small, shimmering decom chip up and over her fingers, one by one. She was mesmerized by how the chip's odd material caught the lights from the motherboard on the wall and reflected them, sending rubies and emeralds twinkling across all the wires and fans and humming power converters. Mesmerized, but without really seeing them. Her thoughts were stretched between thousands of miles. Earth, the Eastern Commonwealth, New Beijing, and Kai, who was now engaged to Queen Lavanna. Her stomach turned, and she kept recalling the venom in his voice when he'd talked to her about the Queen. She tried to imagine what he was going through now. Did he have any other choice? She couldn't be sure. She wanted to say yes, that anything, war, pestilence, slavery, would be better than choosing Lavanna as empress. But she didn't know if it was true. She didn't know if he'd ever had a choice, or if this decision had always been inevitable. Her thoughts turned away from Earth, toward Luna, a country she didn't even remember, a home she'd never known. Queen Lavanna was no doubt celebrating her victory at this moment, giving no thought to all those lives she'd just taken. Queen Lavanna, Cinder's aunt. The decom chip click, click, clicked against her fingers.
"Cinder, are you in here?"
Her fingers stilled with the chip balanced on her pinky knuckle.
"Yeah, Aiko, I'm here." "Maybe next time we're on Earth you can pick up some sensors. I feel like I'm eavesdropping having the audio on all the time. It's becoming awkward."
"Awkward?" The running lights brightened, reminding Cinder of a blush. She wondered if it was intentional.
"Scarlet and Wolf are saying gushy things in the galley," Aiko said. "Normally I like gushy things, but it's different when it's real people. I prefer the net dramas."
Unexpectedly, Cinder found herself smiling.
"I'll do my best to get some sensors next time we're on Earth,"
she resumed her fiddling. The chip flipped, clacked, flipped, rolled. "How are you feeling, Aiko? Are you getting used to being the auto control system? Is it getting easier?" Something hummed on the computer panel.
"The shock has worn off, but it still feels like I'm pretending to be much more powerful than I really am, and I'm going to let everyone down. It's a lot of responsibility."
The yellow running lights brightened by the floor.
"But I did well in Paris, didn't I?"
"You were brilliant." The temperature of the engine room spiked.
"I was kind of brilliant."
"We'd all be dead if it weren't for you." Aiko let off an unusually pitchy noise, one that Cinder thought might be a nervous giggle.
"I guess it's not so bad being the ship, you know, so long as you need me."
Cinder smirked.
"That's very
big of you." One of the engine fans slowed.
"That was a joke, wasn't it?"
Laughing, Cinder practiced spinning the chip like a top on the tip of her finger. It took a few tries before she got the hang of it and could watch it sparkle and dance without much effort.
"How about you?" Aiko said after a moment. "How does it feel to be a real princess?"
Cinder flinched. The chip tumbled off her finger, and she barely caught it.
"So far, it's not nearly as fun as one would imagine."
"What were you saying about having too much power and responsibility and feeling like you're going to let everyone down?" "Because that all sounded pretty familiar."
"I thought that might be the case. Are you mad that I didn't tell you?"
A long silence followed, tying Cinder's stomach in knots.
"No,"
Aiko said finally, and Cinder wished that her lie detector worked on androids, or spaceships.
"But I'm worried.
Before, I figured that Queen Levana would tire of searching for us, and eventually we'd be able to go home, or at least go back to Earth and live normal lives again. But that's never going to happen, is it?
Cinder gulped and started flipping the chip over her fingers again.
I don't think so.
Click, click, click. She exhaled a long breath and flipped the chip one last time, clutching it in her fist. Levana's gonna murder Kai after they've married. She'll be coronated as Empress, and then she'll kill him, and she'll have the entire Commonwealth under her control. After that, it will be only a matter of time before she invades the rest of the Union. She swept her hair off her forehead. At least, that's what this girl told me, the Queen's programmer. She loosened her grip, suddenly afraid that her metal fist would crush the chip while she was distracted.
But I like Kai.
You and every other girl in the galaxy.
Every girl? Are you finally including yourself in that count?
Cinder bit her lip. She knew Aiko was thinking back to all the times Cinder had teased Peony for her hopeless crush on the prince, pretending to be immune to such silliness herself. But that all seemed a long, long time ago. She could hardly remember the girl she was back then.
I just know that I can't let him marry Levana, she said, her voice snagging.
I can't let him go through with it. She held up the chip between her thumb and forefinger. Her new hand still felt too new, so clean, so untarnished. She squinted and let the electric current flow from her spine, warming up her wrist until the hand looked human, skin and bone.
I concur, said Aiko. So, what are you going to do?
Cinder gulped and let the glamour change. The flesh of her hand became metal again, not flawless titanium, but plain steel, battered with age, grime caked into the crevices, a little too small, a little too stiff. The cyborg hand she replaced, the one she'd always hidden, usually with heavy work-stained cotton. Once with silk. The girl she'd been back then, the one she'd always tried to keep hidden. An orange light blinked at the corner of her eye. She ignored it. I'm going to let Wolf train me. I'm going to become stronger than she is. She flipped the chip again. It was awkward at first, making sure the fingers and the illusion moved just how they were supposed to, that the joints flexed and moved at the right time. I'm going to find Dr. Erland, and he's going to teach me how to win against her. Then, I'm going to track down the girl who programmed this chip, and she's going to tell me everything she knows about Luna and its security and all the Queen's secrets. Click. 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 And then, I'm going to stop hiding.
We hope you've enjoyed Scarlet, a Macmillan audio production from Fywell and Friends. Text copyright 2013 by Marissa Meyer. Production copyright 2013 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.